Hello, respective viewers. I'm outside Caxton Hall in London, and this is where Udham Singh shot dead Sir Michael O'Dwyer on the 13th of March, 1940. So Caxton Hall was built in the late 19th century. It was for various public meetings, political meetings. The suffragettes spoke here, and indeed Winston Churchill's only son, Randolph, got married here a month after the Second World War began. But on the 13th of March, 1940, Sir Michael O'Dwyer came to address the Central Asian Society, the Royal Central Asian Society. And it was advertised in the newspaper that he would speak, and he was the former governor of the Punjab. Of course, in those days, the Punjab included a lot of what's now Pakistan. Udham Singh was born in 1899 in the Punjab, in a Sikh family. But he eschewed all communalism, and indeed often went by the name Ram Muhammad Singh, as in a Hindu, Muslim, and Sikh name, and then giving his last name as Azad, as in freedom. He had joined the British Indian Army right at the end of the First World War, but quickly regretted his decision and asked to be released from it, and indeed was discharged therefrom. He was literate, which certainly doesn't go without saying at the time, because the literacy rate in India over a century ago was only about 20%. So he's brought up in Sikhism, but not particularly observant. But he quickly developed a bitter loathing of British imperialism and longed to see an independent India. So he came to the United Kingdom early in the Second World War. Back then, in the days of the British Empire, everyone was a British subject. Whatever your colour or race, wherever you were born, everybody had the right to reside in the United Kingdom, although in practice very few people did. The UK was over 99% white at the time. So Udham Singh, he spoke limited English, he easily found factory work. The Sikh community, which was minuscule at the time, took him under their wing, and he worshipped in the Gurdwara, Shepherd's Bush Gurdwara, which still exists. And then in his diary, he wrote that he wanted to kill Dyer. He was possibly mistaking Sir Michael O'Dwyer, the governor of the Punjab, for Brigadier Reginald Edward Harry Dyer, the one who'd actually ordered all those people to be shot dead at Jallianwala Bagh in April 1919. Now, that Brigadier General Dyer, who was actually born in Muri, which is now Pakistan, schooled at Middleton College, Ireland, and was obliged to retire after the Amritsar massacre, but didn't serve one day in prison for what he did. And indeed, some of the white Britons resident in India hailed what he did, thought it was absolutely the right thing to do, were completely unapologetic about hundreds of unarmed people being shot dead, including women and children, called him the hero of the hour, present him with an honorific sword, saying that he was a saviour of the Punjab and of India, and had a whip round, collected thousands of pounds for a retirement fund so he wouldn't suffer pecuniarily. And so he lived in relative luxury in his retirement, and then he died in some minor accident, like falling down the stairs, in about 1927. But Sir Michael O'Dwyer from County Tipperary, Ireland, he lived on. He'd come from a minor landowning family. He was a Catholic, which is a majority in Ireland. He'd studied at Balliol College, Oxford. He was a master of several Indian languages and books on Indian affairs, such as India as I Knew It. But he firmly believed that Britannic dominance was best for India, and there must be no concessions to nationalism. There must be only repression in the face of rising unrest. And he believed that the United Kingdom could struggle to hold India if many concessions were made to this idea of self-governance. Moreover, he believed that a mutiny on the scale of 1857 could easily occur. So the only thing to do was to respond very harshly against the least dissent. So he'd got himself a firearm, very easy to get in those days for Udham Singh. The place was awash with firearms. It was the Second World War. Poland had fallen. The phony war was on. There was a bit of fighting in Norway. The German attack on the West didn't begin to the 10th of May 1940. But it was a tense moment. There weren't yet bombing raids in the UK. Men were being called up for military service. There were soldiers patrolling all around. And there was a bit of sort of spy fever. But Udham Singh, he came here, he was there in the audience, he waited for the meeting to end. He realised it was his best chance, as people were milling around, coming closer to Sir Michael O'Dwyer. Then he'd be able to pull out the revolver from under his coat and open fire unchallenged, which he did, opening fire from point-blank range, hitting him twice. One bullet went through the lung and then death was instantaneous. So Udham Singh shot two other men, one of them being the Marquess of Zetland, another British government minister. Lord Zetland survived, as did the other man who was struck by bullets. But Udham Singh was immediately piled upon by the bystanders and disarmed. He had not prepared any escape plan. He seemed to realize that this was a suicide mission. So the police were summoned and the officers of the law apprehended him. He was taken in handcuffs to a nearby police station and interrogated, where he quickly confessed all, despite his English being far from fluent. They got it out of him and he said he bore a grudge against this man. Now, there is the claim that that Udham Singh was there in Amritsar, in Jallianwala Bagh, at the day of the massacre. And the story goes that he collected a bottle of bloodstained sand and he swore to himself that he would exact vengeance upon the man who had killed so many of his countrymen and countrywomen. Of course, Brigadier General Dwyer, as I say, he died in 1927. Sir Michael O'Dwyer, I don't believe, ordered the massacre, but subsequently definitely approved of it and said it was entirely the right thing to do and justifiable. And that there was a commission which investigated it, and then it castigated Dwyer, but in the most mealy-mouthed term, saying it was injudicious and so on. Now, obviously, soldiers are allowed to kill people in combat. This was not a combat situation, and most of the people they killed were not combatants. It was a grossly excessive use of force. He didn't even fire a warning shot. He blocked the only exit. He seemed to want to maximize civilian casualties, not to minimize them, and so forth. Anyway, so Udham Singh was put on trial. V.K. Krishna Menon, the Congress Party activist, was one of the defense barristers. But the result was a foregone conclusion. He was seen by many adult witnesses, not quite in daylight, but in electric light in the evening in there, having shot dead this man. He was apprehended immediately. He'd instantly and repeatedly confessed. The murder weapon had his fingerprints all over it. It was an open and shut case, about the easiest one that the prosecution had ever had to try. Anyway, he was duly found guilty. He was asked if he had anything to say before sentence was passed upon him, and he launched into an incendiary oration and denunciation of what he saw as the wickedry of British imperialism. And the judge interrupted him, and duly the beak on the bench donned the black cap, which was customary before sentence of death was passed upon him, saying, "The sentence of this court, you shall be taken from here unto a lawful prison, wherein you shall be detained until the passage of 3 Sundays clear, and then hanged by the neck until you are dead, and your body buried within the prison walls. May the Lord have mercy on your soul." Take him down. And then he's taken away. So he'd been remanded in custody in Brixton Prison, but he was detained in Pentonville Prison, and that's where he was executed by the United Kingdom's foremost public executioner, Albert Pierpoint, in July 1940. So from the slaying of Sir Michael O'Dwyer to the execution took 4 months. I call him Sir Michael O'Dwyer simply because he was knighted, and there's been no degradation of that knighthood. I'm not honouring him in any way. I'm simply attesting the historical fact that he was granted a knighthood. So then he was executed and he refused to appeal. Now, that might have saved his life. It was a dicey moment for British rule in India. The British authorities did not wish to inflame Indian authority opinion even further. Congress party leaders had been detained, Nehru, Gandhi and so on. So perhaps there could have been a reprieve. It could have been commuted to life imprisonment, but there was no attempt to do so. He went on hunger strike for 42 days. He was force-fed whilst awaiting his prison. So the passage of 3 Sundays clear, at least, was to allow time for appeals, time for last letters, family visits, and all right, coming out from India to visit him, that was impractical at the time. So surprising went so long from the trial to the execution. And then in the 1960s, the Labour government under Harold Wilson, they agreed to exhume his remains. He was not cremated according to Sikh custom. He was interred. But they poured quicklime on the grave, so really it was just mud that was being dug up. There was nothing that was really identifiable as him in terms of bone matter even. But that was interred with great honour in his home village in the Punjab. So there have been films made about him, and many people exalt him and regard him as an icon of India's independent struggle. Well, thank you so much for watching my channel. Make sure you subscribe on Patreon, donate on PayPal, so georgecallahan79@gmail.com. Goodbye, everyone.